and welcome back to Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast, Episode 2. I'm your host, Mr. Jeffrion. This week we discuss early civilizations in Southwest Asia, which you probably know better as the Middle East. This correlates with Bentley and Zeigler's world history text, Traditions and Encounters, Chapter 2. But it really is the basic foundation of any AP World History course or College World Civilization course. Before we get too far, I have some exciting news. We are turning this into an interactive podcast by wrapping up future episodes with listener-submitted questions that I will attempt to answer. There are two ways you can submit questions. Option one is the more exciting way, and that is by calling in and leaving a message on my Google Voice account. What makes that more exciting is that you will get to hear your voice on the podcast. The number for that is area code 321-804 APWH, that's AP World History. And if you don't want to figure out what the letters are, that's 321-804-2794 on your keypad. It's a Central Florida number, so if you are calling outside of the area, any fees or long distance rates from your phone service provider would apply. With cell phones, I think that's probably a moot point right now. But definitely call in. That is the cool way. The second way, which it's still cool also, is to submit a question by email. And the email for this podcast is mrjeffrion@gmail.com. That's mrjeffrion. So definitely submit any world history related questions, and I will do my best to answer them, even if they don't relate to the podcast I'm doing at the moment. It's not really that difficult to kind of shift gears and answer your questions at the end of the podcast. All right, so early civilizations in Southwest Asia. You will find that I use the terms Southwest Asia and the Middle East interchangeably. Southwest Asia is probably the more proper term, but most of us are more familiar with hearing the Middle East. There are many historians and geographers who are not fans of this term because it is a bit Eurocentric. It describes this region in relation to Europe. This is a very significant region to the human story because this was most likely the birthplace of agriculture. Agriculture, of course, provided a surplus of food, which increased the population and allowed job specialization, and allowed people to stay in one place, giving rise to villages, and which grew into cities, which eventually grew into the first civilizations in the Fertile Crescent. Along with civilization came urbanization, trade, the establishment of patriarchal order and written traditions. One of the most significant civilizations we will discuss is ancient Mesopotamia. I'm going to call Mesopotamia civilization, even though many kings and city-states rose to power, conquering this area, only to later on be conquered by another Mesopotamian city-state. Mesopotamia is a Greek term meaning land between the rivers. It refers to the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in what is now Iraq. This is where it all began. Mesopotamia is the first of a handful of early civilizations we will discuss in the coming weeks known as the River Valley Civilizations. Of course, there's certainly advantages to having your society, in particular an agrarian society, to begin at a river. And I will leave that to the listener to figure out why. So, what is Mesopotamia's impact on our modern age? Mesopotamia really establishes the definition of the term civilization. If you go back and listen to episode 1, if you're unfamiliar with the criteria for civilizations, I go over the 8 features of civilization in that. This civilization largely begins with the earliest Mesopotamian city-state, Sumer. Sumer gives us arguably the greatest gift of all, writing. The first writing was used for business and tax records and developed into the first real writing system, cuneiform. I've also heard it pronounced cuneiform, but I usually go with cuneiform. For the first time in human existence, we can record our knowledge, and once recorded, that knowledge can be improved upon, and the human story progresses at a remarkable rate. Sumerians also developed the wheel, which was most likely first used in pottery making for food storage. They have all this extra grain. They need a place to put it. It's sort of the forerunner of Tupperware. Later on, the wheel would be adapted for transportation use. Sumerians are also responsible for the sail, which expands trade and communication, and they used a number system based on 60, which is very similar to the one we use to measure time today. There are actually some individuals worth mentioning in regards to Mesopotamia. Obviously, prehistory, no writing. We didn't have any individuals to mention last week. The first one I'm going to mention very briefly, Sargon of Akkad. This is the guy that established the first empire. But the king that is most remembered, and probably if you're going to remember a Mesopotamian king, he's the guy you should remember, is the Babylonian king Hammurabi. His claim to fame is Hammurabi's Code. This is often credited as being the first written law ever, and it influenced later laws that would develop, whether we're talking about Hebrew-Jewish law in the Ten Commandments, or Greek law, Roman law, Egyptian law, Persian law. It's based on an idea called Lex Talionis, which can be translated to mean retribution. If you've ever heard the expression, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, that all begins with Hammurabi's Code. Even if a rich man did something against a poor man, there was retribution. Sounds fair, right? Not so fast. Punishment under the law was dictated by social class. For example, if a noble knocked out the tooth of another noble, the offending noble would have his tooth knocked out as well. However, if the noble knocked out the tooth of a commoner, he would have to pay that commoner some silver. So, while we often portray Lady Justice as blind and holding scales, Babylonian law was not blind. Class played a major role in all aspects of Mesopotamian society, and the law was no exception. In addition to Hammurabi's Code, if you really want to understand Mesopotamian society, you should read the Epic of Gilgamesh. You can actually find this online in a variety of places, including Gutenberg.org, that's Gutenberg.org. There are a variety of literary tools and ideas that are still used today that begin with this story. One such is the monomyth, the hero's journey, as found in the Iliad, the Wizard of Oz, Star Wars, the Harry Potter books, just about every story you've ever heard or read or movie that you've ever seen. That's the hero's journey. But the Epic of Gilgamesh is about a Babylonian king who is half god and half mortal, kind of like Hercules, and is seeking immortality. It also includes the first great flood story, which would influence later ones in the Jewish and Greek traditions. How does a Middle East society become so influential? Well, mostly through trade with surrounding peoples. One nearby group was the Hittites. The Hittites are an interesting group. They're probably the first to develop iron metallurgy, working with iron, which of course improved tools and farming implements and warfare. The Hittites traded and even fought wars with the Mesopotamian civilizations. Later on, the Hittites, through trade, introduced the chariot to the Egyptians. They're one of many groups that comprise a larger identity. The Hittites are Indo-Europeans. The Indo-Europeans are significant because they migrated into parts of Europe and India, spreading their language, culture, and aiding in the diffusion of ideas and technology. In fact, the Indo-European group called the Aryans, who we will look at in a couple weeks, even laid out the foundation of Hinduism in India. One of the things especially interesting to students who are Jewish or Christian about, you know, as far as Mesopotamia is concerned, is this is the world of the Old Testament. Places like Babylon and people like Nebuchadnezzar were real and can be found in the historical record, which means it gives us a chance to explore the foundations of Jewish belief, and consequently, the foundations of Christian belief. People are often under the misconception that we cannot teach about religion in public schools, and I'm addressing this because I teach in a public school. That's just not true. We are able to teach about religion, we just can't endorse one religion over another as teachers. The religion that's in public schools are the one that students bring with them. Students can pray and carry a Bible all they want. As far as academic purposes, especially for history, a basic understanding of world religions is essential to the understanding of world history. If history is the laboratory in which we test the consequence of human thought and action, the key variable as to why people did the things they did, or even today do the things they do, is belief. Often, that belief is codified in the form of a religion. So, as historians, it is necessary to study religion, at least in an academic sense. So let's look at the ancient Hebrew people. In terms of key people in Judaism, we should recognize Abraham as the patriarch. He's the father of the Jews. This is where it all seems to start, with Abraham. Later on, Moses is responsible for bringing Jewish law, the Ten Commandments. Moses is also likely the author of much of the Torah, or what Christians call the Old Testament of the Bible. When we think of religion in the ancient world, whether we're talking about Mesopotamians, Egyptians, or the Indus, we are usually talking about polytheism, the belief in many gods. This allowed ancient people to accept when good things and bad things happened to them. If good things happened, it was because a particular god liked you. When bad things happened, it was because some other god was upset. What the Hebrews brought to the table was monotheism, the belief in one god, who they called Yahweh. Hebrews certainly struggled with Yahweh's nature and the answer to the question, why do bad things happen to good people? And we see this illustrated in Jewish writings like the Book of Job. The Mesopotamians also reconciled this with their own book called The Righteous Sufferer. But again, Mesopotamians are polytheists, so they're sort of given an easy out due to the nature of polytheism. Hebrew people had to accept that Yahweh was simultaneously powerful, personal, jealous, and just. If you are looking for additional resources to learn more about this topic, John Green has a crash course video for Mesopotamia that can be found on YouTube. Just do a search on YouTube for Crash Course World History, and there's actually tons of Crash Course World History videos, and they're awesome, so I highly recommend watching them. There's also just plenty out there on the web and in books. Just for fun, get on YouTube, do a search for a song called The Mesopotamians by They Might Be Giants. I think you'll like it. Until next time, I'm Mr. Jeffreon, and this has been Mr. Jeffreon's World History Podcast.